TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. Extinction Rebellion, How to Repair Democracy. Linda Doyle talks about citizens' assemblies. The Extinction Rebellion movement that started in the UK in late 2018 and spread across the world has brought attention to the problem of climate change in a way that has only been achieved by the school strike movement. Extinction Rebellion's huge outdoor assemblies and performances, road and bridge closures, the acts of nonviolent civil resistance and disobedience, and their willingness to be arrested are meant to compel governments to finally act to end the use of fossil fuels by 2025, to prevent the collapse of the world's ecosystems. Among their top three demands is for governments to tell the truth and to set up citizens' assemblies that are chosen to represent the population in class, gender, and race. The assemblies address a specific task, interview experts and scientists, deliberate and vote on what action to take. Even though the idea of citizens' assemblies goes back to Athenian democracy, they have come into use again across the world. The most famous modern-day citizens' assembly was set up in Ireland in 2016. They debated the issue of abortion. The Irish Constitution had criminalized abortion. But the deliberations of the citizens' assembly led to a referendum and the repeal of the abortion ban. Here's Linda Doyle of Extinction Rebellion UK explaining the details.
Thank you all very much for coming to this talk. I'm the external coordinator of XOR's National Citizens Assembly Working Group here in the UK. And I'm going to be talking about what is a citizens' assembly and why do we need one on climate and ecological justice. To start off, three demands, that is, tell the truth by declaring climate and ecological emergency. We need the government to actually acknowledge where we are in the climate situation and to acknowledge our potential future. And we really need a wartime mobilization in order to tackle that. Which comes into demand two, which is act now to halt biodiversity loss and reduce greenhouse gas emissions to net zero by 2025. And demand three, we have a National Citizens Assembly on climate and ecological justice in order to figure out how we can justly transition to a zero carbon emissions society. Just to give you a little bit of an overview of what a citizens' assembly is. It is about randomly selecting people from the population in such a way that they are representative of that population. And then they get together, they learn from experts and people who have lived experiences of the topic, and they deliberate together. And together they then come to some recommendations or some decisions, which then goes on to inform government or local authority policy. This is a form of deliberative democracy, which falls under the broader umbrella of direct democracy. And so first of all, direct democracy is about cutting out the middleman, having a direct say on the issues, on political decisions. However, deliberative democracy takes into account that rather than just each individual having their say, casting a vote on a particular issue, it would be much better if we could all come together and thrash out these topics together and learn from one another and understand each other's perspectives. And through doing that, then make a decision. A citizens' assembly is also a mini public in that you're selecting a smaller group to represent the whole of the population. They represent the population in terms of key demographic characteristics. And the idea of this is that people are supposed to think, if I was selected, if I had time to learn and to deliberate with my peers, perhaps I would come to a similar conclusion as the assembly did. This is really key in terms of climate change, with the scale and scope of changes that are needed to address the climate and ecological emergency. the changes must come from the people. They must gain public support, not be handed down from elites. And that's really one of the key reasons why a citizens' assembly will be particularly useful to address this issue. Okay, so I'll just talk us through the process of a citizens' assembly. First is to randomly select people from the population. This is done by a process known as sortition, and that is really key. It was developed in ancient Athens, and it was used to ensure that no one person held too much power and to stop people from becoming corrupt, from having held power for too long. And it is used in citizens' assemblies for the same reason. The next step is then you bring everybody together, maybe in a conference center, in a hotel, somewhere in the country. They learn from experts. This is not just experts in the academic sense, but this includes people who have lived experiences of the topic that is being deliberated. So, for example, in terms of the climate emergency, that might include people who are climate migrants, or people like the Fairborn community, which will be the first internal climate migrants because they are living on in a coastal village, and that village has actually been decommissioned. And so they are going to be some of the first of the UK's internal climate migrants. So you could hear from people like them who have lived experience of the issue at hand. So there's also a submission process by which anybody in the country can write into the assembly. And they can write in to tell the assembly about their hopes, their dreams, their fears, fully blown policy legislation that they've written, you know, whatever it is that they want. And that then will be collated and given to the assembly in a more condensed version to read. And I think this is a really nice way so that everybody in the country can feed into the assembly. The next step is that they get into groups of maybe 7 to 10 people, and they deliberate, and it's a facilitated deliberation. So the facilitation is important to ensure that they keep on topic and that nobody has more than their fair share, let's say, basically to bring out the voices which might be less inclined to talk in that type of situation, and then to make sure that everybody has an equal say. That's really the heart of the citizens' assembly, as it were, is where you might have a CEO, a farmer, a single mother, all sat around the same table. And they're all, you know, expressing their hopes and dreams and why they're passionate about one thing and why they're fearful or concerned about another thing. And that's really the beauty or the heart of the citizens' assembly, because it can break down all of these barriers. You know, we don't often talk to people from different educational levels than us in society, our ideological bubbles that we just converse within. So this is really about breaking that down and allowing people to communicate in a safe space with their peers from all across the country. Then the next step is that the Citizens' Assembly will draft recommendations and vote on them and produce a report that is then given to whoever commissioned the Assembly. And so they might come up with maybe 10 to 15 recommendations that they vote on. But in the rest of the report, there's room for more nuanced detail of perspectives that were presented during the Assembly. And they don't have to come to a consensus decision. That's not it at all. In fact, the more diversity of perspectives that is included is really encouraged. So that report then is given to government or the local authority or whoever commissioned it to inform their policy and to be implemented, which I will say a little bit more about that later on. So next, I'm going to talk a little bit about quota sampling. Here we have the kind of general population, let's say. The point of this is to ensure that the assembly is representative of the public, because if you have, you know, in the UK you have 66 million, that's the population, and if you randomly selected 100 people, you might end up with just 100 white people, for example. So the first step is that you sort people into groups. Most populations have 50% men and 50% women, leaving aside that gender isn't really binary. just for the purposes of this example. So you might have 50% men and 50% women in the population. You would sort the people into the groups of men and women, and then within that you randomly select. So now I'm just going to give you some examples of citizens' assemblies from around the world, and there are many different processes that have been done under the umbrella of deliberative democracy all around the world. Canada, Australia, Ireland, Belgium, Netherlands, Involve, which was here in the UK, and Innovations in Democracy, which is a project that was commissioned by the Department of Culture and Media and Arts, I think, that's currently running at the moment. They're currently running 3 citizens' assemblies in different towns around the country. And so I'm going to talk a little bit about the Irish example. It was established by the Irish Parliament, which was really key in that the Parliament really wanted to know what the Assembly thought. And that was kind of led to a lot of the success of this Assembly. It was made up of 99 citizens. They debated 5 issues over a year and a half, which included things like gay marriage, abortion, and climate change. And it was really useful to inform political debate around these topics. Gay marriage and abortion, they went to a referendum because they were constitutional issues, so they had to go to a referendum in Ireland. That's not always the case with citizens' assemblies. But ahead of those referenda, it was really important to create and frame the political debate and get to the heart of the key issues. For example, in the case of the Citizens' Assembly on abortion, there was a de facto ban on abortion in Ireland up until last year. And the Assembly voted 64% to update the abortion laws with the European standard of abortion on demand up to 12 weeks. And that was really closely matched by 66% of the population voted for this in the referendum. So this was really useful in order to inform the question that was on the ballot paper, basically. So rather than asking maybe something more abstract, they used the Citizens' Assembly to really get to the heart of the issues and see what people really thought about this issue, and then use that to bring the process forward to bring it back to the whole population. And they also had a Citizens' Assembly on climate change. And this Citizens' Assembly came up with 13 recommendations, all of which received over 80% support, which I think is really, it's really great that there was actually a large consensus for a lot of action on climate change. The one I find most interesting is that they voted to basically raise taxes on carbon-intensive activities. And this is quite powerful given that Ireland is a rural country where a lot of people depend on cars and, you know, for agriculture as well. So this Citizens' Assembly was actually just 2 weekends, though. This is not nearly long enough to even process all the things we need to process around the climate and ecological emergency, around climate and ecological justice, let alone get into the weeds of deciding policies. And so that's why some of these recommendations are quite superficial level, let's say. So basically, we want something that is a lot bigger and longer in scale and scope. And also, just because this Citizens' Assembly, the report, informed a special governmental committee, and they took all this into consideration, and then they produced a report of the government's action plan in involving these recommendations. And as part of that, they established a Just Transition Committee, which is going around the country to try assess how this is affecting people in their daily lives, for example. You know, we don't want some little old lady who's using her car to just get down to the shops and go to mass every Sunday to be, you know, negatively affected by this, basically. So we need to understand and think about how we can transition to zero carbon in a way that is socially just, basically. And this is a really good way of doing it, I think. We also have this beautiful Extinction Rebellion's Guide to Citizens' Assemblies, which my working group have created. And there's also a People's Assembly Manual. Just to mention as well that I guess these two are interlinked in that part of what Extinction Rebellion is doing is demanding a national citizens' assembly, but we also want to embed new forms of democracy, such as deliberative democracy, into the structure, into UK society, basically. And so that is done through people's assemblies mostly. Lately, there have been a lot of local citizens' assemblies popping up. They work in tandem, let's say. So I've talked a little bit about citizens' assemblies, what they are, and now I'm going to talk about why do we need one on climate and ecological justice. And the national government is the only one that has the power to enact the scale and scope of necessary action, essentially. We need mass collective action. And so the citizens' assemblies at local level are great, and we highly encourage them, but we want help from everybody to lobby the government for a national one as well, because really national level policy is needed for this wartime effort that is needed to tackle this problem. Also, that if you want to make national level policy, we should have a citizens' assembly where there is representatives from every part of the UK present there to deliberate and have their say. So next I'm going to be talking a little bit about our current political system and how citizens' assemblies address some of its failures. One key thing is basically that the current system is not fit for solving long-term problems. It's based on very short-term election cycles of 5 years, and politicians are just focused on what they need to do to get re-elected within that time span. So climate change has been something we've known about for years and years, but it's just always getting kicked down the road. Also, coming back to the idea of direct democracy, is that you elect one person to represent you on so many different issues every 5 years. I mean, we trust juries to make decisions about justice, and that's really important to you, essentially, have someone's life in your hands. So why can't we trust people to also make political decisions? There are also opinion polls, which in between these 5 years, if something new arises or just to update themselves, politicians rely on opinion polls to inform themselves about what their constituents might want. But this is partially informed knee-jerk reactions, essentially. People haven't had the time to learn all of the relevant information on a topic, and it's just their individual perspective rather than something that's informed by, you know, deliberation with their peers. Also, we all know about politicians having to toe the party line, and that party is falling in line with vested interests. So there's a whole other influence that is quite undemocratic happening there, really. And it just has very limited scale and scope for radical ideas. There's research that shows politicians just don't even know what is their mandate to act on climate change. They really don't know or understand or haven't gotten to the heart of what their constituents feel about that and what generally people feel about that. So contrast this with citizens' assemblies. Members of the citizens' assembly can think long-term. So you're in there and you're just thinking about your own preferences. So there's no tactical voting to be done. You're thinking about what you want for yourself, for your own future, for your children's future, for your community. And you don't have to, there's just no issue of thinking about strategically, what do I have to do to please other people and get re-elected. Really, compared to opinion polling, you end up with informed and deliberated public judgments, which is a lot more powerful, obviously, because it's informed first and foremost. Also, that citizens' assemblies are transparent. So the whole way through the process, from the, you know, who is selected to organize it, how are the experts chosen, all of these things, any materials and presentations given to the assembly must be made public. And also that any experts that present, they must disclose their background details, such as if they have any conflicts of interest, for example. It's legitimate because it really is a representation of the public. They've gone through a learning process. And that gives government or local authorities, whoever, a really clear idea of how they, you know, the mandate that they have, the actions that they can now take and what kind of public support that we'll get. And yeah, I really want to stress that this is not, it doesn't really replace parliamentary democracy. It is just kind of a supplement to it that addresses some of its shortcomings and believe it leads to a more advanced form of democracy, because this form of democracy was basically created 200 years ago when you had an uneducated public and we didn't have media, you know, people sent letters and things, and you didn't have the technologies and the social technologies that we have today in order to organize these types of processes. This is also another big reason of why we need one on climate and ecological justice, is because politicians don't seem to know or care. They're just not leading us on this climate and ecological emergency. They're just missing in action, essentially. 40 out of 650 MPs showed up to the first climate change debate in 2 years, which was held during a record-breakingly hot February. This was just earlier this year, 2019, by the way. And school strikes were going on at this time. And this is still what we have. This is why we want a citizens' assembly on this topic, is because we need leadership here. We need, first of all, government to tell the truth and to, you know, I understand that they're clueless and they don't know what kind of actions they should take, and that's fine. Just give it back to the people and let the UK public have their say on how we transition to a zero carbon society by 2025. So just to give you a little bit of what a citizens' assembly on climate and ecological justice could look like, we're proposing greenhouse gas emissions, how we can get them to net zero and halt biodiversity loss by 2025. It also needs to be organized by a completely independent organization, independent of government, independent of parliament, independent of Extinction Rebellion. We do not want any part in the organizing of it, essentially. We are working with experts to develop a proposal, which is essentially a more fleshed out version of the third demand, which we will give to government to say, this is what we believe needs to happen in order to tackle the scale and scope of this problem. And this is what we're suggesting, but ultimately the design will rest with this organization that is selected to run the Citizens' Assembly. What we're advocating for is a really large Citizens' Assembly, which will have where people are to, you know, everybody is together to learn about the climate science and social justice issues. Then they break into kind of smaller panels to tackle specific issues of policy. For example, you could have a separate panel on transport, power, agriculture, housing, food security, etc. And we're thinking that each of these panels will be maybe 50 to 100 members each. We really also want to make sure that a social justice focus is in there in terms of the experts that are presenting to the assemblies. I think this is really important to ensure we don't have something like the Gilets Jaunes. You know, it's really important that any policy, any recommendations that come out of this citizens' assembly are just for the whole of society, and therefore the whole of the British public can get behind these recommendations. We're also advocating that recommendations with over 80% support are implemented, that the government commits publicly before the assembly, perhaps even addresses the assembly, to tell them what they're going to do with their recommendations. And we're advocating that ones with over 80% support are implemented, which has already been done in Poland. And so this is already in practice. And then the rest of the recommendations, the government must address them and must provide a rationale as to why these recommendations were either accepted, modified, or rejected. Some people argue that it's too expensive, and getting them all to one location, paying for hotels and accommodation, paying the organizational body, paying facilitators, paying the citizens for their time, all of these things add up, and it could come to maybe 1 million, something like that. But if you put that in contrast to how much the House of Lords cost us, 19 million per year, I think this would be a lot better use of public money to actually hear from the public and inform policy that way. And also that we're advocating for this method because we believe it's going to be the most useful to gain public support for radical action. So the alternative to this is, you know, we don't really know, but we know that the current system has brought us to the edge of extinction. So I think it's about time we try something else. Some people are also worried that what if the Assembly makes the wrong decisions? And we've seen in the Irish example, they don't come up with anything crazy. They actually were presented to about nuclear and they didn't recommend that. And from talking to Citizens Assembly experts, they've said that they've never had anyone who couldn't understand the information and who couldn't participate in a really meaningful way. So I have trust in my fellow citizens, and I think society is a compromise and we need to come together to figure out how to move forward and how to tackle this issue, because otherwise we're either not going to break the deadlock around this issue, or we're going to end up with some kind of eco-fascist solution, perhaps. So I hope I have convinced you that what we're advocating for here is a really evidence-based democratic solution. Extinction Rebellion is not trying to exert their will on anyone. We're just trying to be the alarm bells that make people realize we need to talk about this issue. This is a tried and tested method that's been used before in many countries around the world. So, you know, you might see us out on the streets and think we're super radical and whatever, but this is what we're advocating for. It's just an evidence-based democratic solution. So I'm just going to end with just telling you a little bit about the UK's National Citizens Assembly Working Group. So what we're doing is designing a Citizens Assembly to be a proposal outlining the key things that we think are necessary around this issue. I've already mentioned social justice, but also, you know, giving people time and space to grieve in the Assembly. If they're hit with all of this climate science, which they perhaps hadn't got the chance to learn about before, you know, these are things that we want considered, basically. We're informing people about citizens' assemblies, just like you guys. And we're lobbying the government directly for a citizens' assembly. After the summer recess, we will be bringing out a three demands bill. So that will be a useful campaigning tool to try get more MPs signed up and publicly committed to the three demands.
That was Linda Doyle, coordinator of Extinction Rebellion's National Citizens Assembly Working Group in the UK. A video of her presentation can be found on YouTube, and printed material, the XR Guide to Citizens Assemblies and the Citizens Assembly Manual are on the website of Extinction Rebellion at rebellion.earth. You can hear this program again for free on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. Look at the newest programs or the podcast page. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening. Give us a call.